goes astray, and the flame dies away. You walk the lonesome night.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is Larry Bloom, and you are listening to The Divorce Hour. Today, I'm going to be joined by Cheryl Kirschenbaum, talking about her book, The Science of Kissing, What Our Lips Are Telling Us. Can we put Cheryl up? Cheryl, how are you?
Good. Hi, Larry. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, thank you so much. You know, we've been trying to do this since last spring.
It's a treat to be broadcast there, because that's where I grew up.
I know that. And I want to apologize to you officially and publicly. As your mother has been telling me, there is no C in Kirschenbaum.
Well, thanks to my mother, and I appreciate that, too.
Okay, and I apologize for doing that. I got to tell you, even before the preface in the book, you quote that great line from Fred Savage to Peter Falk in the Princess Bride. Is this a kissing story?
Well, I couldn't leave that out.
Well, this is a kissing show.
Good.
And just so everyone is aware, I am on the Upper West Side of Manhattan, and Cheryl is in Austin, Texas?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we're not actually going to be doing any kissing with each other during this show. We're just going to talk about it. This interview certainly comes at an appropriate time. Well, first of all, last week, and I want to thank my listeners, you made last week's show the highest rated live broadcast in the history of the Talking Alternative Broadcasting Network. We had more live listeners. And Cheryl, we were talking about what was essentially women's erotica. So today we're going to get a little more technical and deal with the basics, which is the kiss. We are 3 weeks away from Valentine's Day. We are less than 24 hours away from the first vacation I have had in a long time. And the emphasis on my vacation is going to be kissing. Mm. So this show is all about me, as my listeners know. And it's stuff that I want to talk about. And today I want to talk about kissing. Let's start with the first question.
Okay.
Are you a kissing expert, or are you the kissing expert?
Oh, dear. I know a lot about it, but I never imagined I'd be writing about the topic, to be honest. It sort of was one of those things that I did a short magazine piece on 4 years ago, and it's just kept following me ever since and turned into a book.
Everybody wants to talk about it.
Everybody does it. And so it's one of those things that's so relatable and a universal behavior and fun to talk about.
Well, let me start with this. I want to tell my listeners that this is a book on science, but it is so readable. I read in the last 48 hours, I reread the book. I had read it in May, and I reread the whole book, and it's such an easy read.
Well, thank you. I'm glad that you feel that way. That was what I tried to do. I didn't want it to be overly technical, and I didn't want to take the romance out of kissing by describing it from so many different perspectives.
Well, you took a little romance out of it, actually.
Oh, dear.
No, I mean, certainly when you get to cooties.
There is you can't write a kissing book without a chapter on all the cooties.
Okay. So, I mean, that was your word, not mine, so. Now, the book is set up in, what am I doing? Would you be kind enough to tell our listeners how they can find this book?
Sure. You can find it at Amazon or Barnes & Noble or anywhere you do your book shopping for the most part.
Okay.
And it's also on Kindle and everything.
And I will tell you, I'm a big guy on instant gratification, and before I owned a Kindle, which I could get my book instantaneously, I found it on the shelf in the Barnes & Noble, my local Barnes & Noble. And the book is relatively new. It only came out about a year ago, right?
About a year ago, yeah.
So, you know, we're very fortunate to have you on. I know that you've done a lot of press on this. And I've read some of your interviews. Before we even get into the topics of it, I found one interview where you say a kiss is 24 calories.
Oh. Well, where I say a kiss isn't actually 24
hours. Oh, okay. but you see, the rumor that it was, excuse me, the rumor that a kiss was 24 calories.
Yeah, that was one of the funniest things, because for the purpose of the book, I was only interested in what the science community had published. I was looking in the primary literature. But I kept running into, out of the primary literature, this quote, this, you know, little factoid, a kiss burns 24 or 26 calories over and over. And I'm thinking,
urban legend, I guess.
Yeah, well, you know, so the following Halloween, I was eating Hershey's Kisses, and I saw that particular kind had 26 calories, and I thought, ah, well, that's how pseudoscience happens, right? Someone said, you know, a Hershey's Kiss has 26 calories, and that evolves into you burn 26 calories during a kiss.
So that is so great.
I thought that was funny.
The book is broken up into three sections, and one is the hunt. The first is the hunt for kissing's origins. We all kiss. Well, I guess we all kiss. I mean, our mothers kiss us, our fathers kiss us when we're little babies.
Right. It's not all about romance.
Right. And what I found remarkable, at least in our species, was the pre-mastication.
Mm.
And, you know, I was just fascinated by that because, truthfully, the Gerbers were 20th century people. Cuisinart was later in the 20th century, and how did little babies get their food back in Mr. and Mrs. Caveman time?
Right. Well, all around the world in different cultures, the pre-chewing of food for another individual, usually parents to children, but also for the elderly and for the sick, was very common. And so, but with infants, our first experiences with love and comfort and security, not just through sharing food with our parents, but also through nursing, involve lip movement, lip stimulation, and sort of build the basis of the neural pathways that get associated with these really positive emotions and experiences. And so some anthropologists and neuroscientists think that out of these, earliest encounters, the kiss was born. And so we express ourselves, we express some of the similar sentiments through kissing as adults because of it.
Okay, got it. Now, what I found interesting was, I mean, in this section, you deal with history, anthropology, biology,
mm-hmm.
evolution, literature, and religion.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's a mouthful,
there's
so
a lot
to speak,
yeah.
Pun unintended. Now, you talked about the fact that in our species, in the human being, our lips are everted, and that's unusual for most of the species in the world, correct?
Right, right. Our lips purse outwardly, and they're that rosy pink color, and they're actually packed with sensitive nerve endings. And so even the slightest brush against our lips sends a cascade of information to our brains telling us about the environment we're in and what we might want to do next. Of course, it's not all kissing. It's eating, it's temperature, it's taste, it's all these things. But we're interpreting the world through our mouths in so many more ways than we realize.
That's great. And what I found interesting, and it's really true, that a kiss involves all five senses. And we're mm-hmm. going to talk about that more with Cheryl when we come back after our first break. You are listening to Cheryl Kirschenbaum, the author of The Science of Kissing, What Our Lips Are Telling Us. My name is Larry Bloom. I am your host here at the Divorce Hour on Talking Alternative.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Are you stuck in your business or career? Trying to take your business to the next level and it keeps hitting a wall? This is Sam Leibowitz, the Conscious Consultant. I will help you get to the root cause of your abundance issues and help move you forward in your life. Call me now and let's create the future you dream of. 212-721-8183. That's 212-721-8183. The Conscious Consultant, helping conscious people be better business people.
Hi, this is psychic medium Betsy Cohen, host of the show The Power of Intuition. Join me at TalkingAlternative.com Mondays at 11 a.m. Call in for a free psychic reading. Learn how to tune into your intuition to feel better and to create your optimum life. I'm here to guide you and to assist you in creating the life that you deserve. Listen every Monday at 11 a.m. on TalkingAlternative.com.
Are you feeling overwhelmed in the current chaos of our changing times? A deeper understanding of authentic astrology can uncover solutions in every area of life. After all, metaphysics is just quantum physics, poetically expressed. I am Montgomery Taylor, and I offer lectures, seminars, and private consultations. For more information, contact me at Monty, M-O-N-T-Y, at rljmedia.com.
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
I kissed her, the Beach Boys. I am here with Cheryl Kirschbaum. Cheryl, are you still with me?
I'm here.
Okay. The five senses are all involved in kissing. Tell me, you know what I found? I finally found in your book an explanation of why many people, I dare I say most, I haven't kissed most people, but kiss with their eyes closed.
Because they're... Yeah, our pupils dilate during a romantic kiss. So they think that that might be the reason so many of us do close our eyes.
That's wild. So, but, you know, certainly the vision takes place. We see what we want to kiss. We are attracted to, speaking as a man, we are attracted to red, rosy lips.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part evolutionary, correct?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I spoke to a neuroscientist out at UC San Diego, V.S. Ramachandran. He's famous for all of the work looking at phantom limbs, so why amputees still feel parts of their body that are missing.
Right.
But he thinks about a lot of other things as well, and he was interested in why our lips evolved to be so attractive, to look the way they do. And so with help from zoologist Desmond Morris, they thought about why humans are so attracted to the color red, and he thinks, V.S. Ramachandran thinks, that it might have to do with our ancestors looking for ripe fruit, which, while it sounds completely unrelated...
well, it's still a sensual sensation.
Right, right. When you'd get that reward if you did locate some food, and among the brush it was those rosy, reddish, ripe colors that stood out, so... it became sort of hardwired into the human brain that red signals something that we should really pay attention to. And advertisers use this today. We see red stop signs. We see red sale signs. It's something that really works to get our attention. And so over time, this became emphasized in parts of the female anatomy, the genitals, but also the lips. And the lips get to swell with blood when we're aroused. And it's the color is something that we continue to emphasize today through products. But even 3,000 years ago, we have evidence from ancient Egypt, ancient Greece, that women were tinting and dyeing their lips.
And they were doing that with wine and with...
With dyes, with all sorts of different materials, depending on where in the world they were. So this has a long history. And then, of course, cosmetically now, women are doing more than ever to enhance this sort of what we call a bee stung effect. Because large lips are associated with higher estrogen levels, which may be indicative of fertility, but do serve as kind of an attractant for males as well. What's interesting, though, is there's been research done on what is it about full lips that's so attractive, and it turns out that usually the natural proportions that we're born with, work the best for our faith. So men are often reporting that they're turned off by, you know, what they describe as so-called duck lips, but lips that are pumped up so big that they set off the natural proportions of our faith.
Well, and as a man, I hear lips, I think Angelina Jolie.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. One of the sexiest women alive, but yeah, and that's part of the reason.
And, you know, really, that's... I imagine that other men are attracted to other aspects of her, but I find that you're talking about the lips. That's what I think of.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, then there were the beautiful women who, of stage and screen, who have overdone it, mm-hmm. and are no longer as attractive as they were before they had their lips done.
Right. It's the kind of thing that a little bit of enhancement through makeup or from you know, can really add to that allure, but you take it too far and something just seems off. You can't quite put your finger on it, but it's not what it's supposed to be.
Now, one of the statistics you put in your book I found interesting. Men say, I forgot what the number was, but it's over 50% of men have said a bad first kiss will terminate, you know, will... send signs that this is not a good relationship, and more than two-thirds of women have experienced that?
Right. Well, that is actually great research out of the State University of New York at Albany by Gordon Gallup and Sarah Hughes and their team.
Having gone to law school in Albany, I can understand why they might have done that. Go ahead.
Well, it's 59% of men, 66% of women.
Okay.
Say that a bad kiss has ended a budding relationship, which is kind of interesting because you think about it, and kissing is really nature's ultimate litmus test. It tells us a lot about the other person, whether we're compatible with them, both for active reasons like, you know, the obvious hygiene and all sorts of things like that, but also there's more to it. We're getting clues about our reproductive compatibility, our genetic compatibility. And we're not consciously aware of it, but something seems a bit off. And I often sort of describe it as there's this great scene in one of my favorite movies, Back to the Future.
Funny, I was just going to mention that.
Yeah. where
the mother doesn't know that her son is her son.
Right. Marty's traveled 30 years back in time, and his mother thinks she's falling in love with him. And then she pulls him in for a kiss, and he's absolutely horrified. But then she says, you know, I don't know what it is, but when I kiss you, I feel like I'm kissing my brother. She, like, instinctively knows that she should back off. And, yes, this is a movie, a great movie, but, you know, it's on film. But it speaks to something deeper, and that's that we seem to know when a kiss just isn't what we hoped it would be. Part of that might actually have to do with our sense of smell, especially for women, because women have a keener sense of smell, a keener sense of taste, and we use these as clues to tell us about the other person. It turns out, through some work done by Klaus Wedekind, that women are most attracted to the scents of men with a different set of genes that code for our immune systems. So scientists think that this might have to be, whereas if you pair off with someone with more diversity in their immune systems, the children would have the benefit of both, be healthier, stronger, more likely to survive.
And that's the evolution.
Yeah. Our noses are telling us a lot about the other person, and kissing is the ultimate way to get that close. But I think what's really interesting in this is that women on the birth control pill seem to show the opposite effect. So they seem to be most attracted to the sense of men whose immune systems are most like theirs, which kind of suggests that we might be fooling our bodies in more ways than we realize when we're on artificial hormones.
Then again, it might also be that men are just so self-absorbed that they just want to kiss themselves.
There are very very notable distinct differences in the preferences and attitudes of men and women on kissing.
That's really incredible. And I guess to some, well, there were 9,000 taste buds on the tongue, so I guess taste comes into it as well.
Mm-hmm.
And pheromones, they're something that you can't smell, you can't taste, but they're there.
Well, we know that humans excrete pheromones. Actually, human males excrete the identical pheromone that male pigs do. But the question is, we're not sure if humans have a way of picking them up. So we know they're out there. We know the chemical composition is exactly the same. But, for example, when a female pig, is ready to reproduce, she gets that she senses that pheromone, and she prepares to be mounted. Whereas women are a lot more Well, complicated. So even if we're picking up on pheromones from men, it's unclear what the relationship is because we have a lot of things going on. And
there's a lot more
research to be done, I think, on that.
Let's call it, there's some anecdotal science in this book as well, which I found interesting. The study on the exotic dancers in gentlemen's clubs. And
you
want to just share that with our listeners for a minute? Because it's really phenomenal on how the tipping works.
It is kind of funny. So this is in New Mexico. Some scientists got these exotic dancers to take part in a study where they just had them write down what time of the month it was in their cycle and also what kind of tips they were earning. And the women who were in estrus, so at the most fertile time of their cycle, were earning twice as many tips as the women who were on their period. And then those weeks in between both of those were kind of an average of the two. And so the scientists say at the end, you know, we're not sure if women are behaving differently when they're most fertile, or if there's something else going on, some kind of pheromone response, something else that just indicates to men that they're more desirable and they're earning more because of that. So again, no one really knows, but it opens the doors.
And I'm sure those women learned what days of the month to take off from work.
I'd love to see a follow-up of that study.
There you go. Can you imagine the guys? I'm sure there were men scientists who said, "Let's study this."
There were a few different. There was something else I touched on in the book where Martha Stein observed prostitutes at work through a one-way mirror.
Uh-huh.
And so these Johns are hiring women to take out as. Escort, I don't know how to describe it, but to take women back to this hotel room, no idea that their whole session is being monitored and there's a woman behind the mirror taking notes on everything that they're doing.
Incredible.
So there's been a lot of research like that.
Incredible. I'm here with Cheryl Kirschenbaum. The book is The Science of Kissing. If you have questions for Cheryl, the number here, 877-480-4120. If you're too shy to call, and you weren't too shy to call last week, so I can't imagine you'd be too shy to call this week, you can email me at larry@divorcebybloom.com, or you can do what? Oh, we can go to the Facebook fan page of the Talking Alternative Broadcasting. Again, I am Larry Bloom. You are listening to The Divorce Hour, and we will be back in a minute.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Are you suffering from aches and pains? Has traditional medicine let you down? Are you tired of taking toxic medications? Then come to the Double Diamond Wellness Center and learn how our natural methods can help you to heal. Call us now at 212-721-8183. That's 212-721-8183. Or find us on the web at www.doublediamondwellness.com. We look forward to serving you.
Is your marriage in trouble? Are you considering divorce? Hello, I'm Lawrence Bloom, a family law attorney in New York and New Jersey. No one is happier than the day their divorce is final. My firm can help you. We take the nasty out of the divorce process and make people happy. Please call us at 212-964-3502 for a free consultation. That's Lawrence H. Bloom at 212-964-3502. We make people happy.
Hey, all you crazy listeners. Looking to boost your business? Why not advertise on Talking Alternative with very reasonable rates? Interested? Simply email at info@talkingalternative.com. Talking Alternative.
Well, when I was a young man and never been kissed, I got to thinking it over how much I had missed. So I got me a girl and I kissed her, and then, oh Lordy, well, I kissed her again, because she had kisses sweeter than wine. She had kisses sweeter than wine.
Jimmy Rogers singing Kisses Sweeter Than Wine. Cheryl.
Hi.
Hi. Where did that expression, Kisses Sweeter Than Wine, come from?
That one I don't know.
Oh, it's in your book.
It's in my book.
It's in your book. It's from the Song of Solomon. That's what I talked about, religion.
Oh, come on. That was like a pop quiz. I didn't know you were talking about the religious part.
Ah.
Okay.
Sorry, I didn't mean to stump you.
Oh, no worries.
Okay, let me ask you this. You are you're a research scientist at the University of Texas.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you went, because I know your mom, because I can't imagine you said, Mom, I want to be a scientist about kissing.
Oh.
Is that what you do primarily?
Is that what?
Is that your primary job, or you do?
Oh,
something?
No. My students think this is hilarious. No. I work in energy, so I'm part of an engineering department here at UT. This entire project was quite an accident, so it's probably about 1% of what I do, but it's been a lot of fun. And actually, it's one of the few topics that I touch on that I don't get hate mail over, because I do a lot of writing about climate change and evolution and contentious topics.
All right, so the evolution you deal with in energy, and you deal with it in the book as well. So,
Well, the purpose of this book, I think, I mean, it was really, you know, science is part of who we are. It's all of our lives. It's often something we sort of treat as a side topic, or in policy, it's a special interest group, but it's central to the human experience. And so I just thought, you know, what a great story that everyone can appreciate, but incorporates so many different aspects of science, and it's a lot of fun.
Well, let me skip ahead for a minute, because I know I'm still in the first section, but let's go to the third section for a moment.
Okay.
You try to do some kissing experiments of your own.
I just thought, you know, if I have a captive audience reading the book, it would be really neat to bring readers into a laboratory and talk about how an experiment gets set up and what kinds of conclusions you can draw and how it all works.
And I think you had some hypotheses going into it that didn't necessarily prove true in the lab.
Right. Well, the thing is, you know, the most surprising thing writing the book was how little research has gone into kissing. When, you know, we spend all this time and energy and resources studying these, like, intricate behaviors of insects and birds, and all that's important, too. But here's something our own species does that has a strong evolutionary basis, and it's really important. And looking at the research so far, I had a lot of questions. One of them was, you know, men are very visual. Women and men describe kissing as very different experiences for very different purposes. And so I wanted to know if neuroscience, if people who study the human brain could kind of peer into the experience and see if we could observe differences between female and male brain response to kissing. And so fortunately, I have a friend who's a neuroscientist at New York University who was kind enough to lend me his lab, his team, and his magnetoencephalography machine, his MEG, which measures the brain's magnetic current in response to activities and events and photos. And so together we set up the whole experiment. The hypothesis was just simply we'd see differences between men and women's responses.
But you thought you were going to see something.
We did see something,
okay.
But not what we expected
okay.
to see.
Okay, that's what I was going to say. What did you think you were going to see first, and then tell us what you actually saw?
Well, I should preface this by saying the limits of studying brain scans in these particular machines is that only one head fits into this machine, which basically looks like you're putting your head into a toilet bowl.
Oh, lovely.
And you can't move. So we were pretty limited with, you know, we couldn't exactly put two people in this MEG machine and ask them to make out. But what we could do is show them photographs. And neuroscientists have seen that there's something called mirror neurons. So if you're watching a behavior, there's a similar brain response in your head that's happening to the people that behavior is actually happening too. So long story short, we thought if we showed people images of couples kissing, men kissing women kissing men, women kissing women, we would see a different response in the brains of the female and male subjects we were studying.
Did you?
So we did not see a marked difference between men and women, regardless of if they were heterosexual, homosexual. We looked at people from all different countries, all different, some different ages. But what we did see was a stronger response to homosexual kisses, so men kissing men or women kissing women, which isn't something we were looking for. We just threw in more photos to have more variety in the pictures. However, at that point, I'm thinking, oh, my goodness, you know, the media is going to have a field day with this and somehow create this story about how, you know, gay kisses are different than straight kisses, and that's not at all what this experiment showed. So I took a lot of time at the end of that chapter explaining that it's probably not because there's any inherent difference in gay kissing and straight kissing, but rather that when something is more novel to us, when we encounter it less, our brain triggers a stronger response. It's called the frequency effect. And so even with language, if you hear someone say a word like table, and then you hear someone say a different word that we are less familiar with, like ibex, ibex evokes a stronger brain response. And so that's probably what we were observing in this experiment. Huh. So really, it wound up being a great example of how science works. You know, you don't go into an experiment knowing what you're going to find on the other side.
That's great. I'm sure that's a learning experience for your students as well.
Yeah, exactly. And what's neat is there have been some different people who do brain research around the country who have subsequently contacted me and said, you know, I'd like to take this a step further. I think it's an interesting setup. Here's an idea. I'm going to try this in my lab. So I think it's sparked at least a good conversation.
That's great. Now, men and women view the kiss as entirely different things, don't they?
Yeah. Well, I mean, these are trends.
In generalities, of in course. General. I'm telling you, while I will probably do something other than kiss while I'm away, I'm concentrating on kissing while I'm away.
Well, good.
Which would put me outside of the norm of men, correct?
It does put you outside of the norm of men, Larry.
Well, though I said to my guest last week, just consider me one of the girls.
Oh. Well, I'll do that from now on.
Thank you.
So it's huge survey. And I should preface this by saying most of the research on kissing has unfortunately been done only on college students. Just by default, that's where the scientists are. That's not representative of most of the population, right?
Right.
So I think that there's a lot to be done on how kissing changes in relationships over time for people of all different ages. But regardless, so there's this enormous study, well over 1,000 people, also done at SUNY Albany, where they looked at the attitudes and preferences of kissing, and what they found overwhelmingly was that the guys tended to describe kissing as a means to an end. So more or less, they were swapping saliva, hoping that down the line...
In other words, they were going from first base in the hope of scoring.
More or less, yes.
Okay. to use the baseball analogy.
Women tended to describe kissing as significant in itself. So women's answers were more likely to be, you know, I'm kissing him to see how he feels about me because it tells me where our relationship is headed, so I can understand if there's a future with this person, and, you know, on and on and on, answers like that. And to me, it was very frustrating because I do not like, you know, typical gender stereotypes, and I'm thinking, you know, this sounds like something you'd see on a sitcom television show. So I ended up calling the people who did this research a little bit frustrated, but we talked a lot about reproductive biology.
Okay.
And basically, you know, as I was saying earlier, women have a stronger sense of taste, a stronger sense of smell, and these provide very important clues about whether this is someone we should pursue, because when it comes down to it, women have to invest a lot more in a relationship that leads to a child. I mean, it's carrying a child, it's investing all that time and energy in a child, and we're fertile for far fewer days of our lives. I mean, there's a few days a month for a limited number of years that we can reproduce. And so because of this, you know, we use kissing to help us assess a partner, figuring out if someone is worth the investment. But there's a flip side to that, and that's that until recently, until all of these advances in DNA, a woman always knew that a baby she had was hers. Whereas a guy, you know, who could theoretically impregnate thousands of women during his life, and
would never know if the baby was his or not.
Would never know. Exactly. So it's more of an even playing field, I think, than we realize when you take everything into account. But, you know, that's probably part of the reason that kissing has become something that seems so much more important to relationships for women.
Okay. If our listeners have a question for Cheryl, or for me, or want to make a comment, we could always get into the nature versus nurture, the art versus science of kissing. Please give us a call at 877-480-4120. I am here with Cheryl Kirshenbaum, author of The Science of Kissing, What Our Lips Are Telling Us. My name is Larry Bloom. I am your host here on the Divorce Hour on Talking Alternative.
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
Hi, I'm Carol Ward from the Body Mind Wellness Program. Listen to my show for ideas and information to help you live a healthier life in body, mind, and spirit. You'll hear from terrific guests who are experts in the areas of health, wellness, and creativity. So join me every Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time on TalkingAlternative.com. Professionals serving community.
This is Tony Martinetti, the aptly named host of Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. Technology, fundraising, compliance, social media. Small and medium nonprofits have needs in all these areas. My guests are expert in all these areas and more. Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio, Fridays, 1 to 2 Eastern on Talking Alternative Broadcasting.
Are you concerned about the future of your business or career? Would you like it all to just be better? Well, the way to do that is through better communication. And the best way to do that is training from the team at Improving Communications. This is Larry Sharp, host of the Ivory Tower Radio Program and director at Improving Communications. Does your office need better leadership, customer service, sales, or maybe better writing or speaking skills? Could they be better at dealing with confrontation, conflicts, and touchy subjects? All are covered here at Improving Communications. If you're in the New York City area, stop by one of our public classes or get your human resources in touch with us. The website is improvingcommunications.com. That's improvingcommunications.com. Improve your professional environment. Be more effective. Be happier and make more money. Improving Communications. That's the answer.
TalkingAlternative.com.
I didn't even hear that line before about Cherry Chapstick. That was Katy Perry singing I Kissed a Girl. Cheryl, you still with me?
I'm here.
Okay, great. I think we might have a call, but one of the things I want to talk about is kissing and controversy. I thought that song was a good lead-in for that topic. But first, we have a caller whose name is Linda. Linda is on line one. Linda, how are you today?
Hi, Larry.
Thank you
Hi,
for calling.
Cheryl. Hi.
Do you have a question for Cheryl?
Yes, I do.
Okay,
First, I would like to say that I find this very interesting, and it's good to listen to you, Cheryl.
Thank you.
My question would be, of all the research that you have done for the book, and all the things you have learned that went into the book, did you find that there was a particular topic or area that either fascinated you the most or shocked you the most or just something that stays with you more than others or that you enjoyed writing about the most?
Good question.
Well, the most surprising thing to me, as I said before, was just how little research has gone into kissing at all. But I really enjoy the chapter looking around the animal kingdom, because, I mean, I have dogs that'll lick any noun, person, place, or thing. But a lot of different people were asking me about, do other species kiss? And the truth is that scientists have to be so careful talking about the emotional lives of other animals because they don't want to be accused of anthropomorphizing. So they don't want to pretend to know what drives another species to do a certain behavior. But you look around, you see lions nipping, birds preening.
Giraffes necking.
All this stuff. And so it's clear that if we broaden the definition of kissing to include socially significant behaviors for a variety of reasons, from grooming to social hierarchy to, pair bonding, then it's fair enough to say we're not alone. And I spoke to a lot of really interesting zoologists who had the most endearing stories, including a pair of bonobos, which are related to us. They're like chimpanzees, another primate cousin, which have been observed to suck on each other's tongues for 12 minutes straight in the wild. So it's fair to say that humans aren't the only people, expressing ourselves.
Well, you did say in the book that the bonobos share 97% of our DNA with us. That's
they
wild.
They do, and
that's
they also
wild.
Have pink lips like we do.
Okay. That's that's fascinating. And so there's a lot of that going on as well, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Linda, do you have anything else you want to add?
No, except that I'm enjoying the show.
Thank you. Keep listening and tell your friends.
Thank you.
Okay. Since we're talking about the animal kingdom, could you please share with our listeners the story of Coco's kiss?
Oh, I love that story.
Me too. I told you, one of the girls, I'm a romantic at heart.
Oh, but it is so sweet, and yes. So Coco the gorilla, a lot of people are familiar with Coco, and Coco was taught by her human family, Penny, all these different words in sign language. So there have been all these different primates that have learned sign language, and Coco the gorilla is one of the most famous. Everyone hears about Coco's kitten. And when it was time for Coco to pair off and find a mate, the scientists involved kind of employed a sort of video dating where Coco was supposed to give the thumbs up or the thumbs down depending on whether she liked the male gorilla that they showed on screen.
That's wild.
And when they put one particular male gorilla on screen, and I'm forgetting his name, I wrote that bit a long time ago, maybe you have it, but when they put the one that she really, really liked on the monitor, she didn't give the thumbs up or the thumbs down. She leaned into the screen and kissed him. Or kiss the image of him, and I just thought that was so cute because then there was no question in anyone's mind how she felt about that particular male.
That was Nadubi from the Brookfield Zoo outside Chicago.
Yes, yes, and they later on did get to meet, although they didn't end up mating successfully.
That was going to be my next question. I guess.
I think that they brought them together, and then it became more of a brother and sister type of thing. But I haven't followed up on that. That's one of the kind of after notes of a chapter, so it'd be interesting to go back.
Yeah, that does sound interesting. But, I'll skip ahead again, because you were dealing with the future of kissing, after you did your experimentation. And you were talking about how video dating is impacting on kissing and the science of kissing and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. If you could share that with us.
Yeah, well, I mean, towards the end of the book, I go into sort of where we're headed. And when you think about it, so many of us are going online to find love with Match.com and OkCupid, and it makes the dating pool seemingly limitless, right? Because you can keep meeting new people and finding new people who you share your interests with.
There are a million of faces out there.
Right. But it sort of limits our ability to employ our natural ability to recognize our attraction to someone, because we're missing out on a lot of when you wink or poke or whatever any particular forum allows you to do, you're not getting that sort of reliable, whether it's scent, whether it's body language, whatever it is, you're missing out on that while you're kind of investing in getting to know that person, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. But you might spend a long time chatting with someone online who, in person, you would immediately sense this isn't the right person to date, or vice versa. You might pass over someone online who, you didn't notice their picture, when if you met in a room, you would think, oh, there's real chemistry involved here. And so it just kind of makes you realize that technology is changing the way that we're meeting people. Not necessarily in a bad way, though, because, again, you have more opportunities online than we've ever really had before.
Although there was a bad way, what I considered to be a bad way, you might not consider it that, with the sex robots that are being developed. Roxy, with how many
Roxy.
X's in Roxy?
Roxy
and Rocky?
Three X's.
Three X's.
So at the adult toy and film, I don't remember what it's called, but it's
the
big
expo. The expo.
The big expo every year of the sex industry. In 2010, there was the debut of Roxy. Roxy is the first fully life-sized female adult companion robot who can have a conversation with you and recognize your voice. So she has a voice recognition technology. She does all these things, and this was coming out around the time I was turning in my final manuscript. And so I kind of saw this thing, and I thought, well, she can do all these things. She can be your fantasy. She can talk to you. Can she kiss? And so I just thought it would be kind of a fun side part of the future chapter in the book. So I called up the engineer, who definitely was not used to young women calling in to ask questions about his robot's technology. And I said, you know, she can do these things. Can she kiss? And he was silent because he was very sweet, but he was kind of quiet for a bit. And then he said, well, her mouth is one of three inputs.
Oh, my God.
But she can't kiss. But, because don't forget, Roxy is mainly geared toward male users.
Right.
You know, and kissing is something that, as I've said,
is not all that important.
More important to women. If this, they're coming out with a male version named Rocky, and if this is something that that women are requesting, they would look into. Now, I personally don't think that any kind of robotic technology is going to mimic a human kiss anytime soon. But it opens the doors for what might be down the line.
There you go. I want to talk about. I want to go back to kissing and controversy in our last segment, which we will do after the break. Unless, of course, somebody wants to call in and ask a question on their own, 877-480-4120. I am here with Cheryl Kirshenbaum talking about her book, The Science of Kissing. My name is Larry Bloom. I am your host here at the Divorce Hour.
Talking Alternative Radio. 24 hours a day.
Hi, I'm Carol Ward from the Body Mind Wellness Program. Listen to my show for ideas and information to help you live a healthier life in body, mind, and spirit. You'll hear from terrific guests who are experts in the areas of health, wellness, and creativity. So join me every Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time on TalkingAlternative.com. Professionals serving community.
This is Tony Martinetti, the aptly named host of Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. Technology, fundraising, compliance, social media. Small and medium nonprofits have needs in all these areas. My guests are expert in all these areas and more. Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio, Fridays, 1 to 2 Eastern, on Talking Alternative Broadcasting.
Are you concerned about the future of your business or career? Would you like it all to just be better? Well, the way to do that is through better communication. And the best way to do that is training from the team at Improving Communications. This is Larry Sharp, host of the Ivory Tower Radio Program and director at Improving Communications. Does your office need better leadership, customer service, sales, or maybe better writing or speaking skills? Could they be better at dealing with confrontation, conflicts, and touchy subjects? All are covered here at Improving Communications. If you're in the New York City area, stop by one of our public classes or get your human resources in touch with us. The website is improvingcommunications.com. That's improvingcommunications.com. Improve your professional environment. Be more effective. Be happier and make more money. Improving Communications. That's the answer.
TalkingAlternative.com.
How can I tell if he loves me
Isn't that a great line? Is it his warm embrace? No, it's just his arm. That is Cher singing the Shoop Shoop song, It's in His Kiss. I am talking about kissing with Cheryl Kirshenbaum. First of all, thank you again for sharing this hour with me. I really appreciate it.
Oh, well, it's a treat to be on. Thank you.
Thanks. You know what I found amazing? Because you went through some of the social history, and we're going to talk a little bit about that if I don't ramble on too much. But the first on-screen open-mouth kiss was not until 1961.
Mm-hmm.
That's unbelievable.
Mm-hmm. And it was scandalous. I mean, all the big first kisses on screen were absolutely scandalous, which is kind of funny when you look back at them now, considering what we're willing to watch in the movies. The first one was...
Splendor in the Grass with Natalie Wood. Or are you talking about the first kiss from in the movies from 1896?
1896 was the Edison Company
right. Put
out this kiss where it's just kind of this very conservative-looking couple. The man's got this huge mustache, and they're kind of giggling at each other, and there's just a peck. And at the time, it was the biggest fiasco, and it was just written as this huge scandal where we look back at that now with other things in mind of what makes the movies, and we just think, oh, my goodness.
But I guess, you know, considering it was Warren Beatty and then having him be the biggest sex... matinee idol of his era. Mm-hmm. I guess, you know, that's sex symbol. That was what I was looking for. That's incredible. It really
right,
is.
Right.
Now, over the course of time, political and religious figures have attempted to ban kissing.
Exactly, yeah. Throughout history, we have evidence of emperors and priests and all different leading men, really. Outlawing kissing, either saying that it spread disease or just thinking that it was an affront to God or led to sacrilegious activities. And yeah, but no one has successfully been able to keep kissing down.
Gee, I can't imagine why not.
Yeah, people just really like to do it.
But it's funny that, you know, maybe because these men of power or significance before the 20th century, women had a lesser role and were not leaders.
Mm-hmm.
But funny you should use the word men or influential men.
The most powerful men of many times, Emperor Tiberius, all sorts of different folks just said, you know, it was outlawed, but can't outlaw kissing.
Okay. If you could do me a favor and tell our listeners again how they can get your book, that would be great.
Sure. The Science of Kissing is easy to find on Amazon or Barnes & Noble or Indie Books or your local bookstore.
And if you want to contact Cheryl, you can go to the University of Texas website and probably shoot her an email that way, correct?
Yep.
Okay.
I'm easy to find online.
You're easy to find online. Not easy, but easy to find online. I know you're not easy because I know your mom, and it still took me over almost a full year to get you on for an interview.
It's been a pretty busy year,
That's great.
But thank you so much for having me on.
Oh, and I'm hoping that you will come again. And what are you working on now?
I just actually had a couple articles come out the past week, one of them on energy education. My focus is more on energy.
Okay.
But in terms of books, I'm sort of working on a proposal, so we'll see what happens.
Great. We do have one last caller in, so let's see if we can squeeze that in. Jones, how are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm great. You have a question for Cheryl.
Yes. As a matter of fact, I was going to ask her what she's presently working on and where she will be traveling to and giving lectures.
When will you be on the East Coast?
When will I be back? I'm speaking at the Science and Engineering Festival in Washington, D.C. in April. Speaking in Iowa in another week. But
great.
And I'm speaking at Harvard in another 2 months. But
your mother must be so proud you're going to Harvard.
Well, she already had one son there.
There you go. Joan, anything else? Because I got to wrap up the show. It's almost 1 o'clock.
It's been a terrific show and very informative.
Thank you for listening, and please tell your friends about the show.
Absolutely.
Cheryl, I hope you will come back again.
It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much. I want all my listeners to stay tuned for my good friend Tony, who is always talking about something interesting. Next week, I'm on vacation. I'll be kissing, so We will rebroadcast last week's show. And then after that, I have divorce coach Jean Grossman, divorce financial planner Ivy Menchel, and lots of other interesting people coming in. So have a good 2 weeks, everybody. Kiss a lot. Kiss, don't tell. We don't, you know, unless you want to tell. If you're going to tell, call in the show. Please buy Cheryl's book. It's so interesting. It's such a for a science book, it's a really interesting read. So
thank you.
Thank you very much again. Have a great 2 weeks, everybody, and I will see you in just before Valentine's Day. We'll start talking about things about Valentine's Day and divorce. This has been the Divorce Hour. I've been here with Cheryl Kirschenbaum, no C, talking about the science of kissing. The show is The Divorce Hour. Please tell your friends and keep listening to Talking Alternative.
Bombadida, 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 about the clouds when we're together. Just sing a song and think about sunny weather. Happy trails to you till we meet again.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Looking to meet Mr. or Mrs. Right, but still haven't found the one? Want to make your current relationship as fulfilling as possible? Then please tune in on Mondays at 10 a.m. for Love in the Morning with Marnie Gallison. As a professional matchmaker, I've seen it all. Tune in as we discuss dating, relationships, and more. Start your week off right with Love in the Morning with Marnie Gallison on TalkingAlternative.com.
Hi, I'm Julie.
Hi, I'm Julia.
What are you wearing? Welcome to J&J's Secrets of Style and Beauty.
We know there is beauty and style in all you do, whether it's a job interview,
first date,
or wedding. We also know that not everyone understands what works best for him or her.
We're here to help. Think of us as your personal beauty, style, and grooming gurus. As industry experts, we'll give you the best information for men and women on how to look phenomenal.
Tune in Tuesdays at 8 p.m.
to learn how to look your best.
Are you fed up with talking points rhetoric? Every way you turn, it's left or right spin, ideology, no reality. In fact, it's ideology over intellect. No more. It's time for the truth. Join me, Larry Sharp, a.k.a. The Neo-Sage, Tuesday nights, 9 to 11 Eastern, for the Ivory Tower radio program. In the Ivory Tower, we'll discuss what's important to you, society, politics, business, and family. It's provocative talk for the realist and the skeptic who want to know what's really going on, what does it mean, and what can be done about it. So gain special access to the Ivory Tower and listen to me, Larry Sharp, your Neo-Sage, Tuesday nights, 9 to 11, New York time. Go to ivorytowerradio.com for details. That's ivorytowerradio.com. The Ivory Tower is a great place to visit for both entertainment and education. Listen in, Tuesday nights, 9 to 11. It will make you smarter.
Are you suffering from aches and pains? Has traditional medicine let you down? Are you tired of taking toxic medications? Then come to the Double Diamond Wellness Center and learn how our natural methods can help you to heal. Call us now at 212-721-8183. That's 212-721-8183. Or find us on the web at www.doublediamondwellness.com. We look forward to serving you.
TalkingAlternative.com.